good virtual morning. First service. Welcome to, I know we had at least seven people watching, so welcome to those who are at home as well. The holy days are here again, and they seem to be prophetic, are they not? We all think so. That's why we're here. Prophetic of things that will be fulfilled. Of course, even the spring holy days were once prophetic. We know the Passover was fulfilled long ago. And we see the fall holy days coming with future things represented. But what about today? In between the spring and the fall, has Pentecost been fulfilled, or is it yet to be fulfilled? It is, of course, the day on which the church began. We're all familiar with the tongues miracle of Acts 2, and the giving of God's Spirit on that day certainly was the birthday of the church. It's a fulfillment. And the holy days as a whole also have a historic history parallel, that is, the journey of Israel from Egypt to the Promised Land. And it seems that about 50 days after the Passover, the nation was at Sinai. And so there seems to be an association there between the giving of the covenant and Pentecost. So in the parallel of Israel's history, Pentecost seems to represent the making of the covenant, the beginning of the Old Testament nation, the beginning of the New Testament church. But Pentecost also has an ending aspect to it. It is 50 days after that first harvest of barley. And if we lived in Israel, the barley and the wheat would have ripened in the last 50 days. Today marks the end, the very end, the last day of the wheat harvest. So Pentecost is a celebration of the end of the harvest. So which is it? Is it the feast of the beginning or the feast of the end? This holy day has elements of both. It always seems a little ambiguous. It's not ambiguous, and that's my point today. This holy day has elements of beginning and endings. I don't know what lessons will be drawn out today by the main messages, but there are many elements of both beginnings and endings to be drawn out today. And I was thinking about both of those aspects of Pentecost, and I thought I would use a famous statement about beginnings and endings by Winston Churchill. Just because Winston Churchill had a way of crystallizing ideas into words, and he galvanized the British nation. And the more I thought about the way Winston Churchill put it, the more it seemed apt for the day of Pentecost. Although, of course, his context was completely different. I don't mean to say that today is anything like Winston Churchill's context in World War II. But Churchill gave this speech in 1942 in the Lord Mayor's house in London, late in 1942. So that was after the disastrous years of 1940 and 41. Britain had endured the humiliation in France, Dunkirk, the Blitz, the sinking of many of the German merchant marine by German U-boats. But then in 1941 and 42, the Germans began to exhaust themselves against the Soviet Union. By that time, they had sort of run out of gas, both figuratively and literally. And down in North Africa, the British were fighting the German army. And in 1942, Rommel's army was defeated and the British turned them back. And that was the first ray of sunshine in that gloomy series of Allied losses in World War II. And it was at this point, that's the context of Winston Churchill's famous statement. And I'll play it for you because I don't think you want to hear my imitation of Winston Churchill.
It has been routed. It has been very largely destroyed as a fighting force. Now, this is not the end. It is not even the beginning of the end. But it is perhaps the end of the beginning.
It is not the end. That reminds me of Pentecost. Well, Churchill knew that the victory was years away. You know, one defeat of one British army, by one British army of a German army, wasn't the end for the Nazis. And so he said, this is not the end. And so it is with Pentecost, right? We are not in a war, but we are at the end of a harvest. But it still fits so well because Churchill knew how to turn a memorable phrase. He knew how to put it clearly. And this fits, I think, with the nature of Pentecost. This holy day is not the end. Today is far from the end of the holy days, isn't it? We're in the middle, beginning of summer. We're not yet at the events that it pictures, or that the fall holy days picture. And we know from the holy day total picture that the plan is much bigger than the church itself. The church is the first fruits, and the church is a small part of humanity. And there's a much bigger thing ahead. Millions and billions must be converted. You know, there have to be great time-ending intervention in the affairs of men. So it's not the end. We're not at the end. We're not at the beginning of the end. Now, the blowing of the trumpets is the beginning of the end, not Pentecost. The world will yet need, beyond that, a massive day of atonement, and it will take hundreds of years of teaching to convert millions and billions of people. We are not at the end. We are not at the beginning of the end, but the end of the beginning. Right? Pentecost, like the fall holy days, is a harvest festival. It does celebrate the completion of the harvest. In fact, the Apostle Peter even associated with the term last days. If you remember in Acts 2, Peter says that this is the fulfillment of a prophecy of Joel. Acts 2, verse 16 says, this is what was spoken by the prophet Joel. And it will come to pass in the last days, said God, I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh. So the last days, there is quite plainly, I think, not just the birth of the church, but the whole age of the church's existence. And today pictures the end of that age, but it is the end of the beginning. You might say, well, it's the day of first fruits. That's true. There was an offering made on this day of first fruits of the harvest. But it's not specified in detail what that grain was to consist of. Did they save it from the beginning of the harvest, or was it just from the first harvest? I tend to think it was the former, but it could have been any grain offered from the harvest because that was the first harvest. This was winter wheat, right, in Israel. It's planted in the winter, and it's finished, it's harvested, in the heat of the summer. In Israeli summer, there is no rain at this point, and it doesn't rain again until after Tabernacles. The harvest is done from the fields. Fall holy days follow much later with the harvest of the fruits of the vines and the trees. But the first harvest then represents, I think, the entire age of the church. But it is an era. It's in its entire long era. And this is the harvest that we're trying to do, is it not? When Jesus spoke to his disciples about our work, he put it this way in John chapter 4. Just read one verse in John 4:35. Christ said, say you not, there are yet 4 months, and then comes the harvest. Behold, I say to you, lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are white already to harvest. I don't think his point here was anything about the 4 months. I don't know if that's symbolic of anything at all. I think his point is about the fact that it's ready now. Our harvest is ready now. Notice he says this is the harvest of the fields. This is not the harvest of the vines and trees, which comes in the fall. This is the harvest of the fields. and the fields are white, he said. That would be ripened grain, not vines and trees. Pentecost is at the end of the harvest. The big picture, and the picture that the world misses then, is that this is the end of the beginning. If you were, like some, to mistakenly regard the harvest of the church as the big deal, that is the end of God's work, you'd be missing the big picture, wouldn't you? The first harvest is a big deal to us because the church looks forward to that as our reward. It's our reason for being here in the church. But it's just the beginning. Just the beginning. Pentecost being the end of that beginning, the end of the current age of the new covenant. There is an age yet to come before the really big harvest that's pictured by tabernacles. The fact that there are two harvests, then, is the big thing that the whole professing Christian world misses. They do not consider that the holy days are prophetic. They didn't join us here today, right? The world is not paying attention today. Catholics and Protestants keep Pentecost, but it'll be next week for them because they count from Easter. And the Orthodox, it'll be next month because they use the Julian calendar. And even the Jews don't keep it today because they keep it on a fixed date. So a billion Christians in the world might be keeping Pentecost, but they only see it as the birth of the church, the beginning of what they think is the great harvest, which is the church. But it is not just the beginning of the church, nor is it the big harvest. It's not the beginning. It's not just a beginning. And it's not the great harvest. And this is why what Churchill said, the way he put it, not that he was talking about the holy days, but the statement fits so well. This is not the end. It is not even the beginning of the end, but the end of the beginning. I suppose we will hear many lessons drawn from Pentecost today and the other messages. There are a lot of lessons that can be drawn out. As we listen, we will probably hear lessons of both beginnings and endings. Beginnings as in first fruits of the first harvest, beginnings of the church, beginning of the nation, but we'll also hear lessons probably about the end, about the harvest of that first crop. Both kinds of things are lessons that are in Pentecost, because today is not the end, or even the beginning of the end, but it is the end of the beginning. And we, of course, on this day are going to collect an offering. But instead of turning to the traditional Deuteronomy 16:16, let's just turn a little bit earlier to 16:9. Deuteronomy 16:9. You know from Deuteronomy 16:16 that it's to be collected three times in a year, but it's even more pointed for today, starting in verse 9 of Deuteronomy 16. It says, 7 weeks shall you number unto you. Begin to number the 7 weeks from the time you put the sickle to the corn. In other words, the wave sheaf, as Mr. Hansen explained last week. So we're talking here in this verse specifically about Pentecost. In verse 10, and you shall keep the feast of weeks unto the Lord your God with the tribute of a freewill offering of your hand, which you shall give unto the Lord your God according as the Lord your God has blessed you. A freewill offering. And 11, you shall rejoice. The purpose of this offering, at that time at least, was you shall rejoice before the Lord your God, you, your son, your daughter, manservant, maidservant, Levite, that is within your gates, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow that are among you, in the place which the Lord your God has chosen to place his name there. A freewill offering at that time was for that purpose of rejoicing. It was not a burnt offering. It was not given to the priests. It was a food offering. People brought animals to slaughter. It was given for the eating and enjoyment of the feastgoers, of themselves, not only the offerer, but everyone there, as it says in this passage. manservants, maidservants, everyone. They ate the offering. Today we're not going to eat the offering. We do it a little differently today. Christ replaced all the animal offerings, of course. The feast is a spiritual feast, and we're not literally going to eat an animal. But the principle of God's feast, that is doing what God says, doing it when he says, is still our central purpose, isn't it? We're here today. We look for the intent, and we try to do what God's slightest intent and good pleasure is. What would he really want? So we give, as instructed, a free will offering, and we give it according to God's good pleasure. And the spirit, therefore, of the command to give the offering is not changed. We don't do it to feed ourselves. We do it to, as Christ put it, feed my sheep, don't we? Specifically, we give it to send laborers into that harvest, and magazines and television into the fields that Christ said are ripe for the harvest. I'm sure you brought your offering today, or you probably did. We're not going to pass the basket. It's all, there is a drop box out in the entryway or in the back of the room on the table. You can put your offerings there, or those of you who are at home can send your offerings. We cut three different ways that Mr. Kubik mentioned in his lesson, in his last email to us. And also, I'd like to note that the United Church of God does wish to thank everyone who is a member who directs their offerings to United for this purpose. It is a great boost. It gives a great boost to the work.